Hi, everyone. Welcome to Josh Nason's Punch Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. I'm Josh Nason, writer, editor, podcaster for the website. Hope you guys are having a great week. Welcome to episode 70. We've done it. After 15 years on the air, we finally hit 70 episodes. Thank you guys so much for being part of the ride. We are here talking about International Fight Week. We have not one, but two shows for you to listen to. So the first one dropping here today being Friday, July 7th, and the other one will be dropping later on Friday, July 7th. Two very special guests, both Canadian, on this week that we celebrate, obviously, the 4th of July in America. So go figure on that. We're going to start out talking about Friday's Tough 25 finale. This season has been really fun. And I would urge you to listen, if you're listening to this, at least catch the last episode. It was very entertaining, especially if you're into shenanigans, hijinks, and drunk guys pushing each other. So we talked about that on this episode as well as the show itself. So Tough 25 with Jesse Taylor and Diego Lima trying to complete their comebacks in the finale. Also, Michael Johnson versus Justin Gaethje in the main event and Gaethje's UFC debut. And joining us to help us talk about this is the one and only Paul Fontaine. You've heard him on these airways before, a writer for WrestlingObserver.com. He also does MMA draws. That is his site as well. So he and I talked for about almost 40 minutes, just talk about the card kind of up and down, and also talked a little bit about UFC 213. And we'll at the very end of the show, we'll tell you about our guest that will be joining me later Friday to talk all about UFC 213. So without further ado, let's get to the talking. It's me and Paul Fontaine talking about the Top 25 finale show on Josh Nason's Punch Out. Well, we got a double shot weekend coming up here with UFC, the tough finale coming up on Friday. We have the UFC pay-per-view 212. Is that 213? I'm completely messed up on the numbers. Which one?
213.
And yeah. That voice you hear is our special guest to help me preview Friday night show. He is the one and only Paul Fontaine, him of WrestlingObserver.com fame. And also MMA draws, and we welcome Paul back to the show. He of the joining us for some of the year end reviews we do and all that good stuff. And Paul, the hardball question of the night is, how you doing?
I am doing excellent. I'm about to take my a week holiday, which is greatly deserved.
I think you could take a month holiday, and it'd be greatly deserved.
Yeah, no, I mean, I need this week. No, work's been crazy. Mm. Like real life work, I mean.
Yeah, exactly. All that real life stuff. All that stuff. Well, let's get ready to kick off the week, right? It's an International Fight Week, and it is less as somebody that works in the UFC and I were talking a little bit today. You know, it seems like it's a little bit less of a buzz than in previous weeks, and I think obviously it's because there's no there's no real marquee fight. There's no if you remember last year going into International Fight Week, there's all this buzz obviously because of UFC 200, but even a UFC 199, which is my favorite event of last year, just because of all the fights results, but also just kind of the chaos and Brock's announcement and all this. There was just this real kind of like momentum going into the weekend, and I think there's plenty of fun fights coming up this weekend. But there's just not that that collective kind of like we can't wait for this. It seems that kind of that mojo has been passed on to the Jones DC pay-per-view later in the month. Are you kind of feeling that same thing?
Well, I think the reason it doesn't feel as big is because the Observer website convention isn't on International Fight Week like it usually is. So that's no, but really, no. I hear what you're saying. Like I was actually looking at that today too. And I'm just actually working on a preview of the UFC 213 for my site, and I do mention that like this lineup is, I mean, UFC 200 was probably the most stacked lineup in history, and that I mean that's the most overused term in UFC, but I mean it really applied for that show. And I mean this one, these two shows put together, I mean you could make a really nice card with the top fights out of both of these shows. But neither one of them is, like that can't miss big time event that usually headlines, the International Fight Week.
So going into the so Friday is the Ultimate Fighter 25 finale show. This was the redemption season that just finished this this past Wednesday. So if you have not watched, and you know, if for some reason, if you're into spoilers for this, if you're listening to this show and worry about spoilers for Tough, I think you might be in the wrong spot. So you and I were just talking before we hit record. I just finished watching today. I actually caught up on 5 episodes, I think, in the last like 2-3 days. And this season, I have not been a fan of Tough the past, you know, 5-6 seasons or so. And I used to love the format. I wrote a feature, I think, after the first 10 seasons for Fight Magazine. It was really cool kind of looking back at all this stuff. And, you know, you go back to Top 25 now, and this was – I love the redemption season. I love the fact that there are names that we know, not necessarily, you know, big stars or things like that, but they're guys that we you know, you can be like, oh, yeah, I remember seeing this guy and this guy and this guy, and that they're getting a second chance at or sometimes maybe even a third chance, depending on who it is, for getting back in there. And I don't think anyone's expecting Jesse Taylor or Diego Lima to, you know, necessarily be a championship contender coming out of this. But this season I thought was a lot of fun. We had some hijinks in the show finale, which is, you know, kind of we kind of funny. We're always kind of used to. But this is it was interesting because you saw some of the old characteristics with guys like, you know, Julian Lane, who he was a, you know, let me bang bro guy, and had some issues with alcohol before, and during kind of his buildup, it was a case of, you know, him saying he's got through all this stuff. He kind of rebuilt his life. And then, you know, just like that, it seems he's the same exact character he was back then. And it's but overall, I think this season was a lot of fun. I hope that they do future redemption seasons if they're going to keep this finale, this format going. And what were your thoughts of the season that just wrapped up?
Yeah, I mean, I've watched Tough, you know, since about season 6, and I've watched every season and I watch every episode. But I mean, some of these seasons, like when you're watching these fights with no commentating in the Tough House with no audience, sometimes you're like watching the fight and you lose track of who's who, yeah, and everything like that. But this season, it wasn't like that, because I mean, you knew, you pretty much, if you've been a UFC fan for any length of time, you knew pretty much every fighter on the show. Like, there wasn't, I mean, Tom Galicchio was maybe like the least known name, but I remembered him. I mean, he's kind of got a unique look and a unique voice and kind of an oddball character. And I mean, and you know, you talk about all the stuff that usually goes on in the Tough House. And the funny thing is Jesse Taylor is probably one of the most infamous guys in the history of the show. He blew a shot at the finale by, you know, being an idiot in Las Vegas. And here he was like the sane one of the season, and he was just, you know, all business, and he made it to the finals, and he kind of just plowed his way through. And you know, I'm really looking forward to you know, to this, and I do think that Jesse Taylor, if he's got his head on straight, you know, he could be a player in the division. You know, he's fought a lot at middleweight, so being at welterweight, I think that strength is really gonna play in. I'm not sure about his striking, but if he can take guys down, he's gonna keep them down. And I mean, at least from what I've seen of this season.
So an interesting thing, we've seen actually a trend, and I think it's a welcome trend, is that you don't see a lot of guys from the show getting an opportunity to fight on the actual finale show. There's only 2 fights that involve anyone that is was on the show, one being the Diego Lima Jesse Taylor fight for the top title, top 25 winner, so to speak, and then James Krause and Tom Galecchio, who were the semifinalists. But other than that, I mean, the rest of the card is filled out, and they're just, you know, normal UFC fighters, but people that are already on the roster. So I always think that's interesting. I thought that, you know, going through, I thought maybe they might try to entice Gilbert Smith out of retirement to have that fight against Ramzy Najm. And perhaps there may be, you know, a couple of that this, you know, rivalries tend to be building up. You know, maybe Seth Brzezinski gets a shot or something like that. But there's a, you know, they really have kind of pared it down, and I guess not looking to take on too much salary, or just not looking to take on more fighters. I kind of like that.
Yeah, and I I mean, and it gives you the chance to promote the show. I mean, you've got some interesting fights on this card. And I mean, what's one of the things I always hated was, you know, you don't even know what the card's going to be until 2 days before the event starts. And, you know, for those of us that are kind of into everything, we really like to kind of be on top of what's going on. And, but yeah, I mean, I think we'll see some of these guys come back. I think Ramzi Nizam, you know, earned a shot, you know, to get another fight. And there's a few other ones that, you know, hopefully Dana was kind of watching. And, you know, I think they were hoping Joe Stevenson would do a little better, but I think we may have seen the last of him in UFC. But, you know, he was kind of memorable on the show.
Yeah, one thing I would love to see, and I was talking about this with a guy on Twitter earlier today, was I would love to see, and actually his name is Joe Daddy 85. What a coincidence. We're just talking about Joe Stevenson. I would love to see the tough format go away in its current state, and I would love to see this Tuesday night contender series maybe take more of a veterans and prospects type of thing, and instead of keeping doing the house thing, and maybe focus on do a different type of reality show with or a reality series with some of the personalities and things like that. I love that stuff. I still remember when they did some of the kind of the build up to Cain Velasquez and Junior Dos Santos, and they were really trying to make the effort less training and more on the people themselves. I'd like to see that a little bit more instead of the you know, the classic kind of tough format. I think that's kind of, you know, washed out in 2017 with just the proliferation of divisions, opportunities, spots, you know, the Bellator, even the UFC itself. And this Tuesday night contender series, I would love that to turn that into kind of redemption fights and also prospect fights and kind of do a mix of that. That would be that'd be my dream. But yeah, I mean, I think the season was good, and I guess we'll get into this card because you mentioned a lot of interesting fights here, a few crossroads fights, which are always some of my favorites. On the show, let's put it this way: other than the main event, which is Michael Johnson against the UFC debuting Justin Gaethje, and then Diego Lima versus Jesse Taylor, what fight or fighter stands out the most that you're most interested in seeing Friday night?
I think the fight that I'm kind of most intrigued by is Ed Herman and CB Dolloway, and it's kind of buried in the prelims. You got CB Dolloway is debuting at light heavyweight, which, you know, I never really struck me as the kind of guy that was really big for the division, and he's going up against Ed Herman. So he's like two veterans that, you know, I've, you know, kind of not never really been title contenders, but they're familiar names on the card. But they, you know, you talk about crossroads fights, and I mean, this is kind of what you're talking about. I mean, Ed Herman's, you know, lost three of his last five. But, you know, he's, you know, when he connects, he connects. He knocked out Tim Boesch a year and a half ago in a pretty memorable fight. And Dolloway, you know, he's been out for a while. He had that injury in that elevator on UFC 203, but he's lost three in a row. But, I mean, three in a row, one's against Michael Bisping, the current champ, Lyoto Machida, former champ, and Nate Marquardt. So, I mean, but his last win is against Francis Carmon. So, they both really need a win. And, there's been a lot of guys kind of retiring after their fights recently, and I could really see that here, whichever one of these guys loses.
Yeah, my eye went exactly to that fight too. I love the kind of the where are these guys at fights, and I think this is one where I think, you know, the Dolloway, this is his first fight since the elevator incident in Cleveland. He's been off for a very long time. That was actually a more serious injury than I think a lot of people you know kind of gave credit for. But, you know, Ed Herman, the guy that's kind of stuck around, and you're right, with the retirement string and all that, there's a lot of cases where these guys are around these early seasons of tough and kind of this early generation of UFC, you know, they're slowly kind of getting phased out. And you know, we look at, you know, recently, obviously, the BJ Penn fight, and just when guys get old, they get old really quick. He's kind of hung on there. He's got, you know, kind of finished a few times and things like that. I think this is a, you know, an interesting fight that's on the FS1 prelims. But for me, that one sticks out. I'm also really interested in seeing at this point what Jessica Eye has left, if anything. She's not had a good string of wins here. Gray Maynard, there's you know, there's always concerns about him, and I know he, you know, he won his last fight, but he'd been not a good stretch at all before then. And I think by any means, it's hard to dispute that he probably should have retired like 4 years ago. And I worry about guys like that, especially after some of the beatings that he's taken and, you know, those Frankie Edgar fights and all that. I think it's amazing to see since that series with Frankie Edgar, kind of the fortunes of both guys and where they've went. Gray Maynard, I'm just fighting is obviously a very violent thing, and I think there's a level of concern, but I just, at this stage, I'm a little bit more worried about him than other guys. And then also looking at Angela Hill, someone coming off a fun fight, her last time out, getting the kind of the last second call up, and after all some issues of kind of getting her there, you know, coming back to the UFC, and now is headlining the prelim show on FS1, and someone has a big personality and is kind of emerging, you know, really developed her character, so to speak, in Invicta. And I know you're a big Invicta guy. You watch that quite a bit. So those are, obviously the Ed Herman Dalloway fight I love, but there's a couple of names on there. I'm really interested in seeing, you know, how they perform on this stage, and, you know, some fortunes could change for some people after this Friday night.
Yeah, I agree. And it's, you look way down the card and you see what I guess will probably be the opening fight is, you know, Tisha Torres, who is, you know, kind of looked at as maybe a future champion in the strawweight division. And she's got a really good record, 4-1, but she's, got a reputation of boring fights. So, she's on the Fight Pass prelim, whereas Angela Hill, who's never won a fight in UFC, is headlining the prelim. So, I think Tisha Torres, if she can win her fight against Juliana Lima, that's a potential fight down the road. They fought in Mexico City a couple years ago, and Torres won by decision. But I could easily see a rematch for them, to see one of them maybe getting a little bit closer to a title shot.
So the main event, Michael Johnson versus Justin Gaethje. Gaethje, this is his first fight in the UFC after coming over from World Series of Fighting, the former World Series of Fighting. And Michael Johnson is, he's kind of one of these middle of the road lightweights. I think he's the victim of a very deep division and guys that are just there are he is good enough to be better than kind of the flotsam and jetsam of the division, but he's also not good enough to be in that upper tier. Has obviously a good personality, not afraid of trash talk, and I think he and Gaethje's approach to promoting this fight and really has been just this vitriol and kind of just hatred of each other, at least by Johnson's perspective. And Gaethje seems to be kind of just happy to be there, but willing to kind of dish it out back to Johnson. He is a guy that has surprised a lot of times with some big performances, but also disappointed. And I think back to fights like the Nate Diaz fight, and that was a case of Diaz coming back after a long layoff, and I think it was about a year long layoff, and he came back and just worked over Michael Johnson for three rounds, and that was back in December 2015, and that was one of those that just really kind of like I was surprised because I thought Johnson was really kind of on the rise. Obviously, he'd be coming off a loss before that. But then he comes right back and he just knocks out Dustin Poirier, looks fantastic, and then just looks, not that great against Khabib Nurmagomedov at UFC 205 in last year. So with Johnson, he's 1-3 in his last four fights, and had, after going on that long run, kind of cleaning out some of the older talent in the division. But what do you make of Michael Johnson at this point of his career? What do you think he's going to bring coming into this?
It's like there's two different fighters. If the guy that fought Dustin Poirier shows up that just wants to, just bang, he can take out anybody in the division. But I think what happened in the Diaz fight and definitely in the Nurmagomedov fight was he was worried to go in too close, that, he was going to get taken down, or with Diaz, he's just going to get, kind of slapped around and maybe submitted. So he's, kind of keeping his distance. And those were kind of really boring fights that he was never really in. And, the same thing kind of happened in the Benil Dariush fight, whereas when he's in there with strikers like, Edson Barbosa and obviously Dustin Poirier, Joe Lauzon, guys that, he can just, throw down with, that's where he's going to have an advantage. And I think that's the kind of fighter that Justin Gaethje is. He's not really known for his wrestling. He's, just kind of a dynamic striker. He's going to throw kicks and punches from all angles, going to throw all kinds of weird kicks. And, I've seen pretty much every one of his fights. I've watched literally every World Series of Fighting card, and you know, he's obviously their biggest homegrown star they've ever made. And I really do think that the matchup favors Johnson, even though you look at their records and 117-0 and 117-11, but you know, it's a very different 17 wins for Michael Johnson as opposed to Gaethje. But I mean, that's not to say Gaethje can't, you know, take him out. I think this is going to be a great fight. I don't think it's going five rounds. And I really think that, you know, the guy that shows up against Dustin Poirier shows up here, he's going to stop Gaethje.
So we've got Justin Gaethje, for those that aren't that familiar with him, undefeated, 17-0. He is, I believe it's 6 years in to his, 6 years into his pro career. And has fought a lot, obviously, World Series of Fighting. He was very active, winning their lightweight title. He fought, if you guys remember, Nick Newell. He of the one-arm variety, beating him a couple of years ago when that Nick Newell story was really on the rise. And I remember that fight really well. You know, they were trying to make interesting fights there. They brought in Melvin Gillard. Gaethje beat him. The fights against Luis Palomino, Brian Foster, another guy that has, former UFC talent, and he beat him. But Gaethje's a guy that stops fighters. And the what I hear a lot about Gaethje when it comes to other media people talking is that he just, you know, he's a, almost like they're worried about where he's going to be when he's a lot older, just because he takes a lot of punishment and he's willing to eat a couple shots in order to deliver one. And again, some of these, you know, these talents in the lightweight division for the UFC is that he's going to have to adapt a little bit, or that the talent level is going to go up. So it'll be interesting to see how he adapts to that. What do you think he has to change? I guess if you were advising him, would you say that he should change his style somewhat to look for maximum survival, so to speak, or would you just say keep doing what you're doing and ride it till it breaks down?
Well, that's just it. Like he's just nonstop, and so he's going, you know, he's going headstrong into everything, which obviously opens him up to take damage, and he's taken a lot of damage, and you know, and he's been rocked a few times, and you look at the guys he's been rocked by. I mean, you mentioned Brian Foster. I mean, Luis Palomino is, you know, he's not lighting the world on fire. Even Melvin Gillard, well past his prime, Melvin Gillard, they went to a split decision. So, I mean, you know, he's definitely vulnerable, but I mean, he's got power and he's still young. So, a guy like that, I mean, yeah, if he can get some good coaching and just kind of, you know, hold back when he needs to hold back, but it's a fine line, you know, and even Michael Johnson's, you know, got that issue, right? Where if he's holding back, that's where he's getting beat, because guys are out striking him and out pointing him. And you see him at the end of the fight and he thinks he won because he managed to not get knocked out. But meanwhile, he's getting out pointed, and that's like the worst way to lose. And the Diaz brothers have that same problem too, you know, and I wouldn't say that, you know, Justin Gaethje is the similar kind of fighter to the Diaz brothers, but it's the same kind of thing where, you know, like if you're opening yourself up to get damage, I mean, you can get caught, but I mean, it's risk or reward, right? And that, I mean, that makes for great fighters, like your Eddie Alvarez or Gilbert Melendez or Diego Sanchez, right? Like he's that kind of fighter. But you know, now we got to see him against skilled guys, and I think it's gonna be really interesting. But I mean, for people that, you know, maybe aren't familiar with Justin Gaethje, like this isn't Will Brooks. Like he's not going to come in and just, you know, be, you know, kind of standing back and wrestling guys and, you know, outpointing them for three rounds. This guy's going for it, and it's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point, because you look at the position that UFC's put him in, headlining a show on FS1 the night before on the Friday of International Fight Week. I mean, they're putting the chips in the middle on him, and I love it. I think that they think they have confidence that he's going to deliver an exciting fight, and that's really what they're looking for. And that's, you look at where certain guys are positioned in their first fight over, I think that kind of tells you a lot of what they think. So that should be a fun fight. Michael Johnson slightly favored in that fight as of tonight, being Thursday. Again, Diego Lima, Jesse Taylor, you know, we talked about that a little bit. Jesse Taylor is going to be obviously looking for the takedown. So it's a 3-round fight, not a 5-round fight. So it's a, you know, not a main event or anything like that. So I think with that, yeah, I mean, Jesse Taylor is going to look to take it down and grind it out. I think Lima is going to try to keep it on the feet, try to avoid getting taken down. And he showed some good skills against Galicchio in his fight. But I mean, to me, that seems to be pretty straightforward, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Yeah. It's that's going to be fun.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what, you know, if Taylor wins, and I think Taylor is a 170 favorite right now. So, you know, slight favor, not huge.
Yeah, that surprised me.
You thought it was going to be a little bit more?
I thought actually it would be, you know, maybe even, or maybe even Lima as a slight favorite. Hmm. Like, you know, Taylor, but, you know, Taylor looked really good on the show.
He did. So, yep.
Yeah.
And he's an interesting case that, you know, we talked about this on the show, is that he'd been – you know, he fought so much on the outside and fought against, and you hear this a lot, like certain, you know, Joe Silva used to tell fighters this, like, you know, beat former UFC talents on the regional circuit, and that's going to get you more attention coming back potentially. You know, you can beat, anyone can beat up, you know, this tomato can, things like that. Like we know kind of what the game is, and Jesse Taylor, he beat up legit guys. I mean, he won regional titles and all that, never got the call. So I'll be interested to see, you know, if he gets back, assuming he wins on Friday, if he gets back in the UFC, kind of what they do with him next, and, you know, where he kind of goes from there. But, you know, I think it'd be a nice cap on this run of his career. And after that unfortunate incident back on Tough back in the day, I think it'll be good to see what he can do. Other, you know, interesting fights in the show, Brad Tavares coming back after a long layoff against your fellow Canadian, Elias Teodoro, the Spartan. That should be an interesting fight at middleweight. We have a couple light heavyweight fights as the UFC tries to continue to kind of figure out kind of the bottom end of 205 and try to make that kind of a little bit more interesting. Jared Cannonier returning on the show. Obviously, we talked about Angela Hill against Ashley Yoder. James Krause against Tom Galicchio on the undercard. Ed Herman, CB Dolloway, Jessica Ai at 135 against Aspen Ladd, Gray Maynard, and then also Tisha Torres as well. So very interesting show. Anything else of note for the rest of those fights or fighters?
Yeah, you know, one thing that I thought was interesting, you talked about Jesse Taylor fighting on the regional scene. Marcel Fortuna, who's one of the light heavyweights that you mentioned fighting on the main card, his only career loss actually came to Jesse Taylor. Hmm. And even though Marcel Fortuna's fought as high as heavyweight and Jesse Taylor's welterweight, I found that kind of interesting. Yeah, I mean, there's some of these fights, like, one thing I thought was really interesting when I was looking at this card, if you start at the Ed Herman fight and go down, I mean, that looks like the main card. And then you look at this main card and, you know, like some of these fights, like, I mean, I watch everything and I'm struggling to remember these guys. And like, it's just weird the way they're laying their matches out. And even the last show with BJ Penn fighting in the opener.
Yep.
And when you look at the ratings, like the ratings peaked with the BJ Penn fight. So it almost seems to me like they don't know what they're doing, because if you put the BJ Penn fight in the co-main event slot, you'd have built your audience better. And the ratings showed that. But yet there's, you know, it's like they're doing the same thing here. You know, like Gray Maynard is a well-known name and you've got him buried on the Fight Pass prelims. You know, that CB Dolloway Ed Herman fight, to me, that's third from the top. And I don't know what it's doing on the prelims, but, you know, hey, I'm not their matchmaker, but I don't know who lays out their cards, but, you know, and I don't know if that changed with the new owners or if it changed recently, but it's just kind of really weird.
Yeah, I think it's tough because they're trying to serve so many different masters. You know, obviously with the UFC Fight Pass, they're trying to give people still a reason, another incentive to tune into the prelims and watch some stuff there and kind of just go along and what have you. But, you know, it's also, you kind of look at the and it would be awesome if we could actually have this dialogue with someone from the UFC about this. But
yeah.
What difference does the time frame make in terms of the biggest percentage of your viewing audience, right? Because you think about this main event is probably going to go on at, what, midnight maybe, depending on how the rest of the fights go and things like that. So maybe there are certain people that they're trying to get a little bit more attention paid to, you know, the Angela Hills, and maybe they think some of these fights – look early on that they're trying to be like, well, maybe more of our interesting fights early on that the, you know, Diaki, I don't pronounce his last name. Mark, is it Diakisi?
Diakisi
versus Drake. And you, but again,
that's, see what I mean?
Yeah. Like, you watch is, everything and you don't, you can't go on
and pronounce this is what name. I mean. And like, so if I'm a casual or somewhat casual fan and you know, and if you're watching Tough, you know, you kind of watch things and you, so you turn on the show and you see Ed Herman and CB Dolloway and you're like, oh great. That's two names I know. And you know, and you watch that fight and then you, oh, coming up next, James Krause and Tom Galicchio. And you're like, what? Yeah. And then, so you might tune away for 2 hours and come back for the, you know, for the Jesse Taylor fight. Meanwhile, you're missing all this stuff. So where, you know, whereas if you said coming up later, Ed Herman and CB Dolloway, you might stick around. Like, to me, that makes sense, but you know, yeah. I'm not paid to do this stuff. So,
yeah, I think we're kind of dying in the cast, whatever.
Yeah.
Of the, you build towards the main event and kind of your, it's almost like, you know, New Japan or something like that, right?
Yeah.
It's like your prelim stuff that you kind of just build and you build and you build. So you're like, I'm getting more and more excited, more and more excited, more and more excited. But yeah, the way they do, they try to spread these things out. And it's also kind of weird because the prelims are on FS1 and the main card is on FS1. So you're trying to just build, keep an audience over a certain amount of time. And yeah, I think it has to do something like that, but I don't know. Watch, this turns out to be like the most entertaining card of the year. And then they kind of prove us all wrong. Right.
I hope so. I hope so.
So let me get to, I want to get a few more thoughts on, actually on UFC 213 the night after. We're going to be talking with Spencer Kite, who's going to be doing a full preview. It's a full Canadian, weekend preview, Paul, with you and cool. Spencer joining us, on being Friday. 213, let's get a couple thoughts from you overall on the show, what you're looking forward to most and, what people will be talking about on Monday.
Well, I'm a big women's MMA guy, so I'm definitely looking forward to the main event. I think Amanda Nunes, like, I was amazed that she is. I mean, it's basically a coin flip right now. Last time I looked at the odds, one was -105 and one was -106, and I was shocked because Nunes is, to me, has got to be the most overlooked fighter in UFC. You know, and you know, people raved about Ronda Rousey's record. I mean, she's got 6 first round stoppages and in her UFC career. I mean, that's insane. And I mean, and she's not beating, you know, she's Ronda Rousey, Misha Tate, Sarah McMahon, you know, Jermaine Durandamy, who is the 145 champ. Like, she's mowed through people. And then she had that one fight that everyone goes back to against Valentina Shevchenko where she gassed out. And I think she's got something to prove here. And I would not be surprised to see another quick stoppage. But if she doesn't finish her, then, you know, then we might be looking at Shevchenko kind of outlasting her like everyone's expecting. But I don't know. Like, she's a champ. And to me, like, it's very rare to see the champ be an underdog, and I was shocked at that.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to that fight.
Yeah, the odds are, yeah, as of right now, they're still even, which is amazing because Nunes is just – I mean, and Nunes is just like – she's just ripped through everyone, you know? And you're right. I think it's interesting when those situations come up, like who now I'm going to say whose fault it is because they were – you know, they were promoting her a little bit after, but it's kind of like just what – is it just a – is it like a Demetrius Johnson case where just people aren't that interested? Is it going to take a, you know, a great fight in order to get people interested? And sometimes I kind of fall on that line where I think people tend to really – their respect tends to grow the more difficult it is for the champion to defend. You know, I think back to that, you know, that Jones-Gustafson fight and just how much people just like their respect for Jones seemed to grow after that and you know, whatever happened after that, obviously with his personal life. But it seems like people have more respect for fighters and champions that make it look easy when they actually kind of go through hell to defend and successfully defend their titles. Just kind of the way that it is. I look back at that Robbie Lawler, Rory McDonald fight. You know, everyone was saying, you know, for a while, Rory was very boring. And then he went through this brutal fight and everyone's like, wow, he's a, you know, he's this red killer and all this stuff, you know, just people's perception changes. So, I mean, I don't know if we're going to get that on Saturday, but I wonder if that's kind of maybe what brings people full circle, or maybe just she needs a few more runs of, just running through people where maybe that's going to help too. I'm not really sure.
Well, it's funny you bring up Johnson, that, and that's the one thing, like, if you look at the last three shows she's been on, and I, granted, I'm not saying she was in any way responsible for drawing these numbers, but she was on the shows and they did the numbers. And I mean, you know, her last fight against Ronda Rousey did 1.1 million. The Tate fight did a million. She was on the undercard of the McGregor Diaz fight, you know, but I mean, so she's been on these cards with all these pay-per-view buyers. They're all seeing her. They saw great fights. They saw great performances from her. And who's to say she didn't become a big star from that? I mean, we might be all shocked when the buy rate comes out for this show. Maybe Amanda Nunes is a star and just no one realized it, you know, so I'm going to be very interested in that. I'm all kind of all about the business of MMA. I'm very interested in that stuff. So I don't think that's the case, but, you know, that's another thing, like seeing her headline a show on her own with not much of a marquee kind of undercard. You know, I mean, Whitaker and Romero is a great fight, but you know, they're not moving pay-per-view numbers or TV ratings. Verdum and Overeem is, you know, again, a great fight, two veterans, but neither one of them's ever really been any kind of a draw. So Nunez is kind of the big name on this card, really. And, and it's headlining International Fight Week. Granted, they didn't really have much else they could headline with, and they're kind of putting all their promotional effort behind UFC 214 at the end of the month, but I'm going to be interested in this one. I'm not predicting a huge number, but I would be very, very happy if I was proven wrong.
That's going to be my last question. What's your prediction for the buy?
Yeah, I'm going with around 250.
Okay,
so you know, a little bit lower than what some of the shows recently have done. We still don't really have a number for the Aldo Holloway, although Dave Meltzer was kind of hinting at around the same as the previous two, which would be around 300K. Hmm. So, if it does 300K, I think that's really good. And if it does more than that, I think that maybe means Amanda Nunes is a bit of a bigger star than people realize. And the same thing happened with Holly Holm, right? Where she just kind of, you know, she headlined that Fox show and people, oh, geez, yeah, she's a star. Maybe that's going to happen with Nunez. Who knows?
Yeah, it's been a interesting kind of, I want to say a down year, but a lot of ways after how last year was so amazing from January through December with just storylines and stars and all this stuff. The first 6 months has been it's been a little lackluster, you know. And I hope that this is kind of our, and I think I've said this before, so I hope we need to kind of like get back to where everything is just fun and we're looking forward to these shows and all this stuff. There's kind of some little blips here and there, but I think maybe Jones and Cormier is going to be kind of our gateway into a really kick-ass last 6 months of the year, and we get through whatever is going to happen with this McGregor Mayweather business and see if he actually comes back. I know you don't think he is going to come back.
Nope.
I still think he is for at least one more, but I who knows? I'm surprised there hasn't been like zero promotion of that fight yet. I was thinking about this today. Like, I randomly saw just a tweet about Mayweather McGregor. I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. I completely forgot about it. Like, people are talking about it, but like the full promotion hasn't really been kicked in yet. And I think that's really going to change some things. But I think, you know, so far 2017 has kind of been a drag for MMA. And what I hope is that I hope the second half of the year is a lot more entertaining than the first.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of it's not the 2014, like where everything just kind of the bottom dropped out, but it's more kind of like 2013, where, you know, you had Ronda Rousey coming up and John Jones. We were trying to figure out if he was a star or not, a big, big draw. And Anderson Silva was still around. Like, it's kind of that year similar to me, I think. Like,
yep.
And I think like these shows have actually done a little better than what most people would have predicted. Not, you know, it's not blowing the door off or anything like that, but I think they're going to do okay. And if they can get a couple big numbers like Cormier Jones, and like you said, if McGregor fights again, or if GSP comes back in November, that'll be a great show. No matter what happens, they're going to put on a kick-ass show in Madison Square Garden. And if, you know, GSP's headlining, you know that a lot of big names are going to be on that card because they're going to want a cut of that, want a piece of that. So, you know, that'll be something to look forward to. And obviously if McGregor comes back, and I hope he does, I have my doubts.
Yeah.
I don't know how you go from 100 million plus to 10, 15 million and, probably taking far more damage.
Well, you and I understand that problem well, making the millions and millions that we do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, this has been a lot of fun. Paul, before I let you go, give you a chance to plug away. I know you you mentioned a preview you're doing for MMA Draws, and we'll throw the microphone to you. The floor is yours.
Yeah, MMADraws.com. I do previews for all the UFC shows with my buy rate and TV viewership predictions, so you can find those right now for these two weekend shows and when Bellator coming up. And I do, you know, the UFC and some of the UFC and Bellator coverage for WrestlingObserver.com and even a little bit of wrestling. I did the New Japan show last Sunday. So if you're watching on Saturday, you can kind of follow along with my play-by-play when it aired live on – or tomorrow night, actually, Friday night. That show aired live on New Japan World on Sunday. So you can follow along on WrestlingObserver.com.
Certainly. A jack of all trades and a master of a few as well. Paul Fontaine, thanks so much for returning to Josh Nason's Punch Out this week. Enjoy the fights this weekend.
Thank you very much, sir.
All right. Big thanks to Paul Fontaine for stopping by. You can obviously follow him on Twitter, Paul Ace Fontaine. And yeah, follow him. Let him know you heard him on the show. And give his other stuff a read and a like as well. So coming up later today, helping me break down UFC 213, as you heard I mentioned on the show, is Spencer Kite, old friend of the show. He of UFC.com, as well as The Province in Vancouver, and also some other fine websites over the years. Longtime friend of mine, and very happy to have him join me to talk about UFC 213 a little bit later today, so be on the lookout for that. Best way to get this the show right away, obviously, is to subscribe to the feed, the RSS feed. You can find that on our website, WrestlingObserver.com. Just look over on the right of how to podcast the audio shows, and you can actually find the link for the show. Usually I put that, usually I upload the show at least an hour, typically a half an hour to an hour before it actually goes up live on the site. So you guys can always be sure to check that out. I recommend podcast app Downcast app. For the subscriber-only shows. It makes your life a whole lot easier if you have an iPhone. And I believe Podcast what is the name of it? Podcast app, Podcast Catcher. I'm completely drawing a blank as far as the one for Android and other phones. But there's certainly some good options out there, and you can also find some links on the site as well. So I think we're going to call it good. It's Thursday night as I'm recording this, and we have two big shows coming up. And hopefully we're enjoying a lot of good fights and a lot of good discussion. Come Monday, got some fun guests coming up over the next couple of weeks. And, yeah, we'll start with Spencer Kite here a little bit later today to finish off the weekend and get you all set for International Fight Week, not F4W Convention Week. And obviously, you know, people are very sad about that. But I think people have fun when it comes up in August for SummerSlam Week, Super China Buffet Day, and all that is encompasses that. Obviously, shout out to Dave Meltzer. As you probably have heard if you're listening to this, he lost his father earlier this week after a battle with pancreatic cancer. So our best wishes and thoughts are with Dave. He's working through it, as I think we all expect him to. The Observer is out this week, and as a Herculean effort, no doubt, with all the stuff that was going on in his life. But as we sit here, The Observer, I believe, is just about to go up on the site. And obviously, this is Thursday night, so it's up on the site by the time you're reading this. So our thoughts are with Dave, and obviously a bummer for him to miss everything going on this week, UFC, last weekend in Long Beach for the New Japan shows, and just to see the outpouring of support and respect from the community, just the public stuff you saw, but also a lot of stuff you can assume happened behind the scenes, people reaching out and things like that in a very tough time for Dave. And I know he appreciates subscribers, listeners, all that stuff, and just the love and kind of the warmth and all that stuff. So, you know, this very cold internet and Twitter and all this stuff, it's nice to see people coming together and rallying around someone when they need it. So big shout out to Dave, and thanks for all of you for listening. Thanks for all your support for Dave. Thanks a lot to Paul Fontaine and Spencer Kite coming up a little bit. This is Josh Nason, Josh Nason's Punch Out. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.